Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 59 of the Alabama Liberal Podcast. Now, it's been a while since I've seen you. Those regular listeners, they may realize that it's been about 3 weeks since I released the last episode, episode 58. Probably people were sitting there thinking, well, what gives? Where's Alabama Liberal been? Because he was this huge Joe Biden backer. Even while Joe Biden and all the other pundits who were wrong about everything, they said Joe Biden's dead. He came in fourth in Iowa, fifth in New Hampshire. He's not going to be the nominee. He's dead. He's done for. And Alabama Liberal's like, nope, he's going to be the nominee. Episode 54, I say he's the invisible frontrunner. So everybody was probably looking at it like the biggest Biden bull that's out there, Alabama Liberal, he disappears right before South Carolina. So 58 comes out, it's right before South Carolina, then Biden wins huge, then Buttigieg, Klobuchar drop out and endorse him immediately. Then he cleans up on Super Tuesday. Not long after that, Bloomberg and Elizabeth Warren are gone. So really, he's won the race in only about a 2 week period, which is just unbelievable and unprecedented. But Alabama Liberal said that would happen. He said Biden was the front runner. The media didn't want you to see that. They downplayed everything that he did. So everybody's thinking, where's Alabama Liberal? It's not like him to miss a victory lap. He was right. Everybody else was wrong. And of course, the reason that there's been almost a month between episodes is because I was sick as a dog. And no, not from the coronavirus, something totally unrelated, a really bad sinus infection where you wouldn't have been able to understand what I was saying. That's why I released a few articles, like, you know, written articles, and I was tweeting way too much, arguing with the same 10, 15 people over and over on Twitter. Twitter's a huge fucking time suck. It's a big waste of time. But I was having to do that because I couldn't record a new podcast episode because my voice was distorted. And there's been no new YouTube videos as well because I've been so sick. Now, of course, that I'm feeling a little bit better, the rest of the world is sick and quarantined and living in their house. And of course, people are sitting there thinking like, hey, everything else is disrupted. Real time is shut down. Talk shows are gone. Virtually no new content is going to take place. I saw where it said CBS is not going to do the season finale of that show, The Neighbors, out of coronavirus concerns. They can't record it. And I'm like, yeah, sure, that's the reason. But my podcast is just me. So people say, well, you might want to shut down your podcast for coronavirus fears. Oh, wait a minute. He records it himself with his own equipment by himself in his house. This makes no difference whatsoever in terms of the coronavirus. In fact, everybody's looking at the coronavirus being like, okay, don't go out. Don't go to work. Don't go to school. Don't go to bars. Don't have social engagements. Don't speak to people face to face. Don't be in a gathering of more than 50 people. And I'm like, so basically how I live normally. Everything I do is exactly the same. There's really no difference. And everybody else is living how I am. And it's about to kill them. Everybody's suicidal, being like, oh shit, we can't do anything. Everything's shut down. Welcome to my world. I mean, I record this in a bunker. I eat cans of chili every day. So luckily I have a 50 ton pile of chili from Costco that I pretty much nothing's going to change in terms of my life. But I figured it's time to record some new episodes and release those. Because number one, the race has changed so dramatically. Joe Biden is now all but certain to become the nominee. I see where Bernie fans, they're praying he gets coronavirus. They're praying he dies because that seems to be the only way that he would not be the nominee. And that's changed dramatically in about 3 weeks from when all the pundits said he was dead, he was toast, he was gone. And then, of course, the coronavirus, where everybody's afraid to leave their house. Everybody's basically being like, we're all going to die. The stock market is tanked. In California, Gavin Newsom has shut down just about everything. Los Angeles, specifically where I live, that greaseball Eric Garcetti, he got on TV and was like, hey, we don't want people to panic, but we want to shut down movie theaters, bowling alleys, concert halls, operas, museums, concerts, pretty much everything but grocery stores and your personal bathroom. Everything else is closed, but don't panic at all. The second biggest city in America, we're just going to roll the streets up to where you can't go anywhere or buy anything, but don't worry. Even the fucking libraries are shut down. Now's a good time to swing by the library and pick up a book or a DVD. Oh, wait, they're closed. First time they're relevant in years and they're closed for this thing. So in LA, the libraries are closed until March 31st. They'll probably extend that. There's no cruise boats going out. And I'm looking at this and I'm thinking, you know, I can't help but feel that the media loves this, that they are in love with this development because it is their dream scenario where people are sitting at home, staying glued to a television screen, literally not going out, not doing anything but watching CNN or MSNBC or Fox, seeing how bad it's going to be. For your average Fox News viewer, life has not changed. They're still sitting in their nursing home, glued to a television, learning about all the evils. It just went from Mexicans and Muslims to a Chinese virus. So once again, they're scared to death. They're not doing anything. They're not really living in the world. I don't think that's really changed much from how Fox normally conducts their business. For something like MSNBC and CNN, who their audience is slightly younger, I mean, this is their dream scenario. Then there's all these blogs, The Daily Beast, Huffington Post, Yahoo, Salon, Slate, Vox, on and on and on. And all these things, they're in heaven right now because people are sitting at home. There's nothing to do. Social media is happy because everybody's on Twitter. I've been on Twitter more the last couple of weeks than I have been the last couple of years. Facebook, And I can't help but think that the media is really happy that the way this virus is turning out, with literally everything shut down but internet and television access to them. And that's the only way that people can absorb anything. And that begs the question, are they going to let us have a normal president again? And I say a normal president in the title of this episode, but I also could mean a boring president, a president that's not scaring the shit out of a majority of America. So you have somebody like Joe Biden. The only reason that his candidacy was quote unquote declared dead, Iowa and New Hampshire period, even though those two never fucking accurately predict who the nominee is going to be, South Carolina is a way better indicator of who either party is going to pick than Iowa has ever been. Iowa, quick little aside right here, they were wrong about Bill Clinton. He did not win the Iowa caucus in 92. They were wrong about Ronald Reagan. He did not win the Iowa caucus in 1980. George H.W. Bush did not win the Iowa caucus in 1988. Donald Trump, of course, lost to Ted Cruz in 2016, the Iowa caucus. When you're looking at it, the only person they've really been right about is Barack Obama, and that's why they play up Obama over and over again. We've heard that partly because they're blindingly white, 98% white state, and so they're real proud of themselves for picking Barack Obama. It's also because he's about the only person who's won the Iowa caucus and then went on to win the presidency. Historically, the person who loses the Iowa caucus about half the time becomes the nominee for either party, and then usually goes on to president. And so I just look at it and like, they've got a pretty terrible record of picking actual presidents. New Hampshire is slightly better, but not by much. And then, of course, when you have a candidate like Bernie, who belongs to a neighboring state, and then Buttigieg, who does extremely well with white people. I wasn't really that surprised Biden bombed in those two states. I think I even said that in 54, that he wouldn't win either one of those states, but that he would come roaring back and win South Carolina. And that's exactly what's happened. But the media was so anxious to throw dirt on his grave, declare him dead, say he's dead, he's finished, he's got no chance. Is it going to be Bernie, who scares half the country because he's a socialist? Or is it going to be Warren, who scares people? Is it going to be Buttigieg, who scares evangelicals because he's gay? They were so ready to move on to a different candidate that about half the country doesn't like. And now for somebody like Buttigieg or Barack Obama, that's completely out of their control. That has nothing to do with their beliefs. That has nothing to do with anything that they can control. Half the country hated Barack Obama just because of who he was, his name, his race, who his dad was. His dad was Muslim. He's product of an interracial marriage, and then was the first president to endorse gay marriage. So there was all these different reasons that really were just prejudice. I mean, there was really nothing he could do to win over half the country. They were always ready to see him as President Black Panther. He's going to take everything you love about America and ship it away. Trump's new chief of staff, because that's another thing. He's got a new chief of staff. That's happened in the last couple of weeks. He famously said that he wanted to send Obama back to Kenya. He said that multiple times. And then at the same breath, that's not a racist statement. Oh, no, you just want to send him back to a country that he's not from and never lived in and doesn't have citizenship in. But no, that's not a racist statement at all. You have Trump. Half the country loves him. Half the country hates him. Either way, the media can make a ton of money off of him. MSNBC, you want to know just how bad Trump's latest tweet is? Watch Rachel Maddow for an hour as she fills an hour's worth of time breaking down a 2-second tweet that I guarantee you Trump didn't spend 10 seconds writing that tweet, and we're all talking about it for 48 hours like he's put any thought into that whatsoever. That's been the business model. I'm not convinced that the media even wants to get rid of Trump. I think they kind of are dependent on him at this point. MSNBC is 10 times more relevant under Trump than they would be under Hillary. Their ratings are higher, more people are watching.
You know, just by following Trump's tweets, a reporter can pretend that they're doing investigative journalism, like, oh, I'm responding to Trump's tweets. I wrote a 15-paragraph article about it on Vox. I'm the new Woodward and Bernstein. And then they'd be like, well, what about this story about a black kid at a private school getting harassed and bullied? No, that requires a lot of effort. With Trump's Twitter feed, I just have to follow it and respond to such stuff that he puts out there for us. It's a way to pretend to do investigative journalism when they're not really. So it can kind of be self-serving for the media in that way.
And also, all these different journalists, they can make themselves the story because they know a moron like Trump, he's going to attack Chris Cuomo. He's going to call him Fredo. He's going to go after that ESPN reporter for saying he's a racist. He's constantly reacting to the media. So it's like a dialogue. Most presidents, it's a monologue. Barack Obama releases a statement. Fox News shits their pants. Obama maybe makes a vague reference to it 6 weeks later or something like that. He doesn't really get into it with the media. Trump is a pig in the mud. You've always heard, don't get in the mud with a pig because you both get dirty and the pig likes it. That's Trump. He's a media creation. I mean, really, he's as much a media figure as he is a businessman, as he ever was a businessman. He's a promoter. He's a brander. People call him a carnival barker or a con man. I don't know that that necessarily is an insult to somebody like Trump, because P.T. Barnum was a carnival barker, and Trump is a little bit like that about he wants everything to be grander and larger than life. I don't know that he sees it as the insult people mean it as, because that really is his specialty, the art of the deal. I am a master businessman. Emphasis really more on master than businessman. He has been able to create this image of himself as a genius businessman, but I think it's just more that, you know, the Wizard of Oz. I mean, like, there's no man behind the curtain, but he's built up this media empire or whatever. People believe in this genius, and we're seeing how flimsy that is. With the coronavirus, the first fucking sign of trouble, the stock market tanks. Every fucking thing he's done has made it worse. People are freaking out, largely due to Trump's statements, largely due to him making the wrong moves over and over again. First coming out and saying, the coronavirus is a hoax. This is a hoax created by China to tank our economy. This is what he said about climate crisis. With climate crisis, that worked for his brand, I guess you could say, his idiot believers, because climate crisis is spread out over a 40-year period. By the time people believe it, they're dead. I don't believe it. I know I'm a page with climate crisis. Well, that's great, but when they're 60 years old, they'll be like, you know, I was wrong about that. Yeah, no shit, you were wrong about that. We all had to die so you could be convinced over the years. But coronavirus is different. That is an immediate threat. People are much, much better at processing immediate, we can see it, visceral threats than they are long-term threats. That's why half the country has no savings. They said something like $600 is the only difference between half the country and complete insolvency. And that just goes to show you that Americans are not good at long-term planning. They have no retirement. They have no savings. They're not putting stuff away for a rainy day. And I know. I'm a liberal, so I'm supposed to say, hey, people can't afford to. They can't afford to. It's not their fault that they took 8 years to get a bachelor's degree and signed a shitty student loan that they didn't read and changed their major 3 times and are buried under $150,000 in student loan debt to be a poetry major. That's not their fault. It is kind of their fault, because you got to be able to do long-term planning and see if a degree is going to be worth it or not, if your housing payments are going to be worth it or not, if you've got no money in savings whatsoever, and it's like, what if you get injured? Well, I don't know. The difference between you and 2 weeks is bankruptcy if you can't work for 2 weeks. And we're seeing that play out with the coronavirus. If movie theaters and restaurants and bars and all these different things are shut down for a couple of weeks, you got people working in the retail sector. They only get paid if they show up to work. They only get paid if they clock in or they get tips or whatever. If they can't physically go to a place of work for 3 weeks, they're not getting paid for 3 weeks. And a lot of people, it's like, well, I guess I'll just lay down on the street and die because I have no savings. I have no retirement put away. So I'm basically finished and over with. And that's basically the Trump economy. He's only too happy to take credit for everything Obama did. And the stock market's going up and up and up. And unemployment's going down and down and down. And he's not looking at the real unemployment numbers, which is underemployment, which is people that do gig work with Uber and TaskRabbit, or people that they spend more than they take in. They're kind of living on credit cards or whatever. They're living paycheck to paycheck. Underemployment is a totally different number than unemployment. That number has really gotten worse under Trump, not better, while unemployment has gotten better and better. So because of that, you're seeing the entire economy that he built up, no surprise, is smoke and mirrors. It's all a house of cards. It's not real. And that's no surprise if you know Trump and you know Trump University. In only 6 weeks, I too can become a master businessman. I got an MBA from Trump University. Great. Take that to fucking Berkshire Hathaway. They'll laugh you out of the building. They'll say you're not qualified to operate an Edward Jones on the Bahamas, let alone like a real company. The Trump University College is a scam. The Art of the Deal. You read that book. The biggest takeaway is trick that Trump gave is he doesn't drink alcohol. So during the go-go 80s, when everybody else was drinking alcohol and doing drugs, he was sober as a judge, and he could get people to agree to really bad business deals because they're getting sloshed, they're getting drunk, they're agreeing to his terms or whatever while he's sober. Now, that's in the book. I don't know how many deals he actually closed that way, you know, because I don't know that a lot of drunk businessmen sign papers at the table of a bar. I don't know that that really is true, but that's what he said. So again, it's like his secret to business success, take advantage of drunk people. He can't outmaneuver them unless their judgment is impaired. You've basically got a guy whose entire Art of the Deal, Trump University, the reality of Trump the businessman, he inherits $400 million from his father, not $1 million. $400 million, you take that money, you put it in a blind investment account. He could have sunk that into the S&P 500 index and made about 10 times more money than he actually made over the last 30 years, okay? He's bankrupted on casinos, which Mark Cuban and several other real businessmen say, we didn't know that was possible. We had no idea it was possible to bankrupt on a casino. The whole purpose of a casino casino is people put 10 bucks in a slot machine and maybe get back 50 cents. We didn't know it was possible to lose money on that. He's bankrupting on casinos. He's selling bogus degrees with Trump University. He's been sued 3,500 times in civil court. He's fucked over both of his wives. He lost countless, you know, millions on fucking over anybody who's ever really been in his orbit. The secret to his business success is to burn bridges and then eventually have to turn to the Russians because they're the only people who lend you money because Goldman Sachs calls you radioactive. It's no surprise that this master con man, who's the real secret to his business success, is to inherit a fortune from his father and then somehow fall ass backwards into bankruptcies and more money and get bailed out over and over and over again. Every time that he's about to go under, he just starts a new business and cons more people into thinking he's a master businessman, okay? Really, Trump should be a CNN pundit or something like that. Like, there's a whole industry out there of people who don't know what the hell they're talking about. They're all wrong about almost everything. They're called Ezra Klein. They're called Chris Hayes. They're called media pundits, Lawrence O'Donnell, okay? And Trump, he fits right in there. He went to Wharton Business School. His dad bought him a degree from Wharton, and so he can say he's a master businessman. All these other guys, all they care about is Ivy League degrees. Where'd you go to college? I went to Harvard. Okay, we're going to put you on CNN, but I don't even know anything about politics. Doesn't matter. You went to an Ivy League school. That's all we really care about. So we'll book you from now till the end of time on CNN and MSNBC, and eventually you can start a news blog of your own and make millions of dollars off that. I will take somebody's example. Somebody like Ezra Klein, who has been wrong about everything, but he wears glasses and he's got an Ivy League degree, so people think he's really intelligent. He's fooled people into thinking he's so smart and he's so ahead of the eight ball, and they don't look at it like, wait a minute, he worked for Howard Dean's failed presidential campaign, then he went to go work for the New York Times, then he started Vox, so his entire experience is blue state, ultra-liberal political campaigns and blue state media. All he knows is the world of blue. He's from California, he lives in New York, he's only lived in blue states, worked for blue campaigns, worked in blue media. Oh, I know, let's give him $500,000 publishing contract to write a book about why we're polarized. Guy who doesn't know Republicans at all, never lived in a red state, doesn't know their mentality, probably barely spoken to them in his entire life, and all the people he knows are other media pundits who are also from this similar background. Let's let him write a book about why we're polarized, and he can explain the partisan divide to other liberals who also have never met anybody from red states. So again, you've got this sort of elite media feedback loop. They only talk to each other. I call them pundit meals. You've heard of puppy meals where like all the puppies come around. These are pundit meals. Be from a blue state, New York or California, usually, sometimes Massachusetts, get into an Ivy League school, go through an Ivy League program, then go to work for an elite media newspaper like the New York Times or Washington Post, again, in a blue state or blue area, or you make him work for a very, very left political campaign like Bernie Sanders or Howard Dean or something like that, and that'll just increase your bona fides. Then you get all these bylines under the Daily Beast and Salon and Slate and New York Times, and then you can get on the TV media, also not knowing what the fuck you're talking about. And if you do well enough on the TV media, over and over again, telling people like David Plouffe and David Axelrod and all the Davids that used to work for Obama, telling them things that they want to hear that maybe are true, maybe are not true, but just, again, reinforcing that liberal media feedback loop, then you can eventually get your own show if you do enough of these appearances. And you can do all this without accumulating any kind of actual Republican or red state or purple state real political experience, but you can be on MSNBC 5 nights a week talking about, well, here's the conservative mindset, here's the purple mindset, not keeping in mind that a lot of people lie to pollsters. So they read polls and they think they know people. So you read a poll and you say like, hey, Joe Biden, his support is collapsing. That's bullshit. It was never collapsing, but you read that in a poll that you did where the pollster may have been like, would you prefer Bernie Sanders or Donald Trump? I prefer Bernie Sanders. Okay, so again, Bernie Sanders is the odds-on favorite for this. Joe Biden, he might have dementia. Would you still vote for him? No, I wouldn't vote for him. Oh, Joe Biden, his support is collapsing. None of these polls ever really reflected. People lie to pollsters. That's why Trump's support was constantly underestimated, because a lot of people didn't want to say, I'm a Trump supporter. And it's not just because they're ashamed. If you live in a red state, you know people like Chris Hayes, and I keep naming him. I'm not trying to pick on him, because there's a lot of people like this. I mean, it could be Matt Welsh. They all kind of look the same. They've got the glasses, the Ivy League degree, the slick, decent haircut or whatever, the nerdy chic, you could almost say. And they lie to people like this over and over again, because they're like, these people look down on us. They make fun of us. If you grew up in a red state, what you hear over and over again is New York and LA, they look down on us. They think we're rednecks. They They think we're racist. They think we're stupid. So when you have somebody with a New England accent or somebody from New York and they call you on the phone and they say, hey, are you going to vote for Trump or Hillary? I'll vote for Hillary. And they lie to pollsters like that because they're so afraid of living down to the stereotypes or getting made fun of or being dismissed. And they know that like all they're going to do is take that poll and then you're going to have inside the CNN studios, five people from identical backgrounds. I mean, Anderson Cooper was born rich. His mother's Gloria Vanderbilt, for God fucking sakes. I mean, they don't want a guy like that sitting there with his CNN buddies making fun of him, basically. And that's why they're routinely lying to pollsters. And since they know the media doesn't like Joe Biden and they don't think he's cool, and it's like, again, you know, that the media's in love with Elizabeth Warren. You look at Ezra Klein talk about Elizabeth Warren, you'd think that that was his mother or something. I mean, literally, it's like, Elizabeth Warren's not your fucking grandmother, okay? And yet you look at these people, like, I saw these Twitter basically being like, well, we shouldn't have to choose between Biden and Trump. Joe Biden, he should have dropped out 6 months ago, and then it could have been Kamala or Elizabeth Warren. Bernie Sanders, he should have quit after he had the heart attack, and Joe Biden, he should have quit 6 months ago for no particular reason other than we should only have choices between Warren or Kamala Harris, and then we pick between, and of course, really, they only mean Elizabeth Warren. So the only way Elizabeth Warren could have been president is if all the men drop out tomorrow, and then Kamala Harris eventually drops out, and then, basically, if we have no choices, if it's just the Elizabeth Warren primary, and then she's the nominee, maybe she beats Trump. Although the polls I saw, everybody beat Trump but her. Bernie beats him by a little bit. Buttigieg basically tied him. Kamala would beat him by a little bit. The few polls they had, they kept saying Kamala Harris, she's not electable, she's not electable. The few polls that they had against her and Trump, she beat him in every single poll. Elizabeth Warren is the only candidate out of the top five or six that was losing to Trump consistently getting beat by him, the only one. But people from the media, they come from this perspective of, well, all of the people I went to Columbia with, they all like Elizabeth Warren, and everybody in the New York Times editorial board, which is the only people I talk to, they all like her. So clearly she can win. America likes her and she will be the nominee. And so that's why you see these media candidates that are put forth over and over and over. And if you look, if you're 65 years old, you live in Ohio, and you know that people already, like, the media doesn't care about me. And that's been the message consistently over and over again. Every news blog is based in New York or LA. The internet was supposed to free the media so that, like, somebody like me, Alabama liberal, we could be in Alabama, but because of the internet, we could be read all over the country. And that could have freed the internet to where it could have been real local reporting, real journalistic endeavors and investigative journalism. Instead, the exact opposite happened. Because you could be based anywhere, everybody fled to the coast. So then now almost all media is based in New York, LA, or Washington, D.C., and now it's almost like you have to be there. I'm under no illusions. If I live in Alabama and I'm trying to get out there and be on Rachel Maddow, they'll never contact me. They will never contact me, ever. They will go across the street to somebody in New York who's living right there around the building, and they'll get them to come talk about matters in Alabama, even if they're not from there, even if they've never lived there, even if they don't know what the fuck they're talking about. But it could be a New York Times reporter who said, well, I did some polling over the phone, and I called 10 people in Alabama, and I think this is how they're feeling, and this is what they're doing. And people like me who actually know people who live in the flyover states, as they call them, or the middle of the country, or coastal America, or however you'd like to phrase it, we always knew Joe Biden was going to be the nominee because we knew how deep the support for him was. Bill Whitaker, at the last debate they had before South Carolina, he said, Joe Biden, if you lose South Carolina, are you going to drop out? I'm like, wait a minute. He just came in second in Nevada. He's ahead of everybody but Bernie Sanders in every single poll. You're saying he needs to drop out. You're not asking Elizabeth Warren, who didn't come in the top two in a single one of the first three states. You're not asking Klobuchar. You're asking Biden that question because the perception is he's such a weak nominee. There's no way. He's done. He's finished. Biden comes roaring back to life in South Carolina. And even if he lost South Carolina, people like me who know what's happening, we would have said there's no fucking way he's going to lose Alabama. We know he's going to win Alabama. We can't point to a single state that Pete Buttigieg is going to win on Super Tuesday. We can't point to a single state that Elizabeth Warren and Mike Bloomberg are going to win on Super Tuesday, and they did. But we knew Biden would win Alabama, probably Arkansas, a couple of other red states, probably North Carolina and Virginia. So even if he loses South Carolina, we still know he's going to do quite well in these other states. But yet, the media was just so obsessed that, and people be like, well, now you hear all the Bernie fans being like, well, Biden, the only thing saving him is that James Clyburn, they endorsed Biden. James Clyburn endorsed him. And if Jim Clyburn hadn't have done that, Biden wouldn't be. That's bullshit. Jim Clyburn waited until the Wednesday before the South Carolina primary. He waited till after the South Carolina debate that Tuesday night. Then he endorsed him that Wednesday. Guess what? Early voting has already taken place. So the early voting and the absentee voting, it already shows Joe Biden with a huge lead before Jim Clyburn ever endorsed anybody. What happened with Jim Clyburn? He waited and waited and waited to endorse him, thinking like maybe Buttigieg will pop in South Carolina, Biden will have a heart attack, or who fucking knows what'll happen. Like, he waited till only a couple days before the race because he was looking around actively shopping for somebody else to endorse. But what happened was he saw that the South Carolina voters overwhelmingly favored Joe Biden and were definitely not going to vote for Buttigieg. He's like near zero with African-American support in South Carolina. He has a tough time in the Southeast and probably the majority of the Midwest. I mean, Klobuchar famously said he couldn't even win a statewide race in Indiana when he ran for state treasurer. He got beat in a landslide. So I'm not that surprised that Buttigieg drops out and endorses Biden right after South Carolina, because it's like, hey, on Super Tuesday, there's not a single state that I'm going to come in the top two. So I could either pull on Elizabeth Warren and get beat really badly all over the country, which is almost like, why would I be doing that? Or I could come out now, I can endorse Biden right now, I could look smart as hell, and he'll put me as CIA director or ambassador to the United Nations or whatever it's going to be, whatever job that he gets in the Biden administration, and he will get a job. It's because he's not doing what Bernie's doing. He's not being a selfish old fuck, you know, putting himself over the party and over the country and over beating Donald Trump. He's not putting himself before anyone else. That's why you're going to see Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders left out in the cold, and you'll see probably pretty good jobs for Klobuchar and Buttigieg because they're doing the right thing. People being like, oh, I hate to see Warren putting the party above her own personal ambitions. She didn't. She ran on Super Tuesday. She got beat badly all over the fucking country. Oklahoma, her home state, came in dead last. Biden, Bernie, and Mike Bloomberg all got more votes than she did in her home state of Oklahoma. In Massachusetts, the state she currently represents in the Senate, she came in third. She was supposed to come in big in Texas and California. She didn't. Again, dead last. So when you're looking at it and you're like, she ran in 18 individual states. She didn't come in the top two in a single one of the first 18 states. And this is wildly diverse. This is California. This is Iowa. This is Minnesota. This is her home state. This is the state she represents in the Senate. This is all over the country. With Bernie, they're always like, well, if it weren't for the Confederacy, Bernie would be the nominee. With Warren, you can't say anything like that. The whole country voted and didn't want her. 18 individual states is more than a third of the overall contest that didn't want her. Kamala Harris wasn't even able, a single state didn't vote on her and say, hey, we just don't like Kamala Harris. We don't want her to be the nominee. Warren was cheated. Warren was robbed. I don't see how you can be on planet Earth and say that. Well, you know what happened? It was all sexism. That's true for Hillary, probably for Kamala Harris, where she's forced to drop out of the race before a single state even votes, doesn't even get to find out if people want her. Elizabeth Warren had 18 individual states in a Democratic primary, which is going to be more favorable to her as a female candidate. A huge chunk of the Democratic electorate, suburban women, single women, young women, overwhelmingly more of them in the Democratic primary than the Republican primary. She has all these chances to really convince people, like, hey, I'm a progressive, I'm way left of center, this is a Democratic primary, I'm going to do better in a Democratic primary than I would in a general election because only Democrats and left-leaning people are voting. More women are voting in a Democratic primary than will vote in a general election. More educated voters, because she does very well with policy wonks, nerds, wannabe nerds, wannabe policy wonks like Ezra Klein that may not really know what the fuck they're talking about, but they sure talk a good game because they wear glasses. She does really well with all these groups that are overwhelmingly make up the Democratic primary. And she still didn't come in the top two in a single state in the first 18 states, got beat in a landslide. So no, I don't think sexism was the be-all, end-all reason that if it weren't for sexism, Elizabeth Warren would be the nominee of the Democratic primary. That's bullshit. There's no evidence to back that up or support that. And then people point out, well, Joe Biden, he's beating Bernie Sanders in states that Hillary lost in 2016, and how can you explain that except for sexism? I explain it because of deja vu. I think people are over Bernie Sanders, and of course people in the media don't understand this because they've done quite well during the Trump presidency, so they don't really get why Democratic voters are so ready to get rid of this motherfucker, because again, their ratings are up. Until the coronavirus, their stock portfolios were up, their personal wealth was up, their ratings were up, their business was booming, so maybe they didn't understand why the majority of the country wasn't like, hey, you know, would be great. Let's let Bernie Sanders be the nominee and do a huge intellectual exercise that will end in failure. But at least we've run pure liberal candidate, the most liberal candidate we've ever run. But you know what? At least that good, you know, hypothetical exercise. Bernie Sanders supporters, they come in here telling this bullshit about neoliberal this and Overton window that. It seems like a game to them, like it's a political science theoretical discussion, like you're in a college classroom debating. No, Donald Trump has to go. He cannot be president another 4 years. He's president for another 4 years. Ruth Bader Ginsburg dies. He puts Sarah Palin on the Supreme Court or whoever he would come up with. I mean, you can't have him be president for another 4 years. We just can't have it. It just can't be that way. And of course, the media doesn't share that overwhelming urge to eject him from the office because they don't really want a boring president. They don't want a normal president. And this is the whole theme of the podcast. This is what I'm slowly but surely getting to. They don't understand Joe Biden because Joe Biden, he likes ice cream cones. He likes vanilla ice cream cones and trains. And he's like kind of a normal dude, you could at least say in a sense. Them being like, well, sexism is the only reason that we didn't want the deja vu of once again, Bernie Sanders fucks things up for the eventual nominee. And maybe some states like Michigan and some others were willing to take a flyer on him in 2016, but 2020 rolls around and it's like, you know what? Fuck it. We learned our lesson. We got to get serious.
It's like going to the car dealership and you test drive a Mercedes over and over again. You drive a Ferrari, you drive a Porsche. You know you're going to get a Toyota. And you know what? You need a fucking Toyota. You don't need a Mercedes. You don't need a Porsche. You don't need the goddamn Range Rover tank that drives down the street. You may want that in your heart of hearts. You might think, oh man, me driving a Ferrari. You need the Toyota. Good gas mileage, sturdy car, get you from A to B. This is all you'll ever need. Not too expensive. You know, we could test drive a bogus candidate that we're not really going to put in the general election. But why? Why indulge this exercise? Why let this go on further than it has to? Get the fucking Toyota. Let's quit dicking around. There's about to be a recession.
Bernie goddamn Sanders is not going to be the nominee. We know it. Let's just end this shit. Let's just get rid of it. I mean, for God's sakes, the man can't find people to endorse him within the Democratic Party. Even AOC is trying every way in the world to find a way to weasel out of endorsing him. I mean, you know, she endorsed him, she campaigned for him, but then when she started to see him losing and saw that he really, there's no fucking way he's going to be the nominee. I don't like that he won't rescind Joe Rogan's endorsement. I'm like, yeah, sure, AOC. The Joe Rogan does that podcast or whatever, and I don't know. She doesn't like that he endorsed him and Bernie won't rescind it and reject it. I'm sure that's the reason you're not going to all these rallies. You know, she knows he's going to lose and she doesn't want to be politically on the outs and irrelevant because she's tied her political fortunes to a 79-year-old man who could die in 6 months and is definitely not going to be the nominee. She's like, why would I sacrifice? I have a future in the Democratic Party. Bernie Sanders doesn't. He's never been a Democrat. So why would I sacrifice the future for the past? So when you have even AOC, his only real cheerleader in the Congress and his by far biggest endorsement in terms of current political people that are actual politicians, Bernie Sanders endorsers, I mean, yeah, Marianne Williamson and fucking Susan Sarandon and this traveling circus of oddballs, yeah, I guess you could call those endorsements. But in terms of people that are actually politicians and influential in the Democratic Party, he's got 3 members of the squad and that's it. I mean, there's really nobody else coming out strong for him. You're seeing a lot of states that didn't go for Hillary in 2016 going for Biden. I part of it is because they switched from a caucus to a primary. There's several states like Oklahoma and Idaho, they did go for Bernie Sanders in 2016, but they switched it from a caucus to a primary in that 4 years. And that was the biggest single reason that I was always like, Joe Biden's going to lose Iowa. He'll lose New Hampshire because it borders Vermont and it's the New Hampshire primary. Bernie did well in 2016. He'll do well again. But the Iowa caucus was such, I almost call it a black swan event. It is so outside the mainstream and it is so irrelevant because it's a caucus. And I've always said caucuses, they're terrible. You show up, it takes hours to vote. It only inspires the most hardcore people. Like, hey, who wants to go vote from 3 to 6 p.m. and then after our candidate gets eliminated, we have to stand in line for the second ballot? You're only inspiring the most hardcore people. Joe Biden fans, I'm one of them. We want to go vote in 5 minutes. We want to go cast a ballot. We want to go in, mark a ballot, and leave. And people say, well, in Texas, you saw the black people that it took them just hours and hours to vote, and they were willing to wait 5 hours to vote for Joe Biden. That's because they were pissed. And I was pissed too, because California was not nearly as bad. Now, I'm not going to say nearly as bad as Texas was, but California, there was about an hour and a half wait if you went after work to go vote. If you went after about 4 or 5, you had to wait about an hour and a half. That made us mad. It really pissed us off, but that's different. That's almost like, oh, you're going to prevent me from voting. And that's not something the Democratic Party was doing. That's something the state government in Texas, the governor, the people who control all the voting machines, they deliberately got rid of a lot of voting machines near HBCUs, near black churches, predominantly black neighborhoods. They got rid of a lot of the places to vote. That's almost like, oh, I see, motherfucker. I'll wait 16 hours. I'll pee in a bottle if I have to fucking vote because you're trying to stop me. And that's not democratic. And that makes me angry. It made me mad. And so I can only imagine somebody who had to wait 6 hours to vote. I mean, that's absolutely, that's like a third world country, basically, trying to manipulate it that badly. And so when people are furious and they're mad, and that's something else driving Biden's support. There is a great, you know, Nixon coined that phrase, the silent majority. And right now, there's all these people, you don't see them because they're not part of that elite media feedback loop. They're not part of the Mad Owls and they're not part of that crowd. We don't get interviewed. I can't get on MSNBC. I can't get on Real Time with Bill Maher. They'd rather interview somebody who every prediction they make is wrong. And they'd rather rip me off and go on my Twitter feed or my podcast or my YouTube videos, steal my ideas, to go to the writer's room of a show like Bill Maher, Jimmy Fallon, and be like, hey, well, you know, here's what I was thinking. And of course, it's the 12th writer. Every late night show employs about a dozen to 20 writers almost. Okay, there's a ton of writers that work for these shows. They go on Twitter and all they do is scan like, hey, who's tagging Real Time with Bill Maher every single week? Oh, this guy, Alabama liberal. He's got ideas. Let's steal them. Let's use them as ours. Then we'll go in the writer's room. We'll pitch them to Bill Maher as though there are ideas. So when you look at it, and it's almost like people who know what they're doing and know what they're talking about, they know the middle of the country that everybody talks about as like some kind of abstract. I mean, you got Sarah Silverman being like, oh, I'm going through Trump country, like some anthropological exercise, basically. It's almost like they're going on an excavation or a safari through Arkansas. They don't know these people, and they kind of talk to them as a little bit condescending. It's almost like, oh, we're really all the same, and as if that was really a debate, like they're going to go to Louisiana and people breathe helium instead of oxygen, like they're a different species or something. We can't get in these feedback loops because they're not talking to people who live in the middle of the country. They have no idea what really is happening. People are looking at this and they're like, wait a minute. In 2016, Bernie Sanders was able to manipulate the primary around his every whim. And then Tom Perez becomes the DNC chair in 2017. He lets Bernie control a lot of the rules. He lets him say superdelegates are not going to have as much power. There's not going to be this. There's not going to be that. Because Bernie fundamentally thinks he lost 2016 due to fucking rules. He thinks it was because the rules didn't favor him. And if it wasn't for Debbie Wasserman Schultz and the DNC, he would have been the nominee over Hillary. He fundamentally believed that lie. That was never true, but he believed that. And so instead of doing voter outreach and trying to expand his base and trying to reach new people, he decided to get the rules changed. So Tom Perez bends over backwards because Tom Perez is scared. He doesn't want to be Debbie Wasserman Schultz 2.0. He doesn't want Bernie's horde to be like, oh, they're trying to rig it. They're trying to cheat him. They're trying to fuck him over. All those Republican talking points, which were never true in the first place. So he bends over backwards to allow Bernie to do what he wants. Then in 2018, Bernie runs as an independent for the Senate seat. So again, this guy who shit on the Democratic Party for 30 years runs as a Democrat in 2016, possibly cost Hillary the race. Then in 2018, runs as an independent for the Vermont Senate seat where he doesn't need the Democrats. Then in 2020, he comes back to being a Democratic candidate again. Once again, he's refusing to pay dues to the DNC. This is like somebody trying to be in a labor union and saying, I want to be the president of that labor union. Okay, well, you got to pay dues and be a member for 3 years. Fuck that shit. I want to be president tomorrow. Well, you never paid dues. You've never been a member, and you've talked crap about the labor union for all these decades. I don't care. I don't care. I'm the best person. Let me do it. Well, that's not really how it works. It's rigged. It's rigged against me. Okay. You can run. You can run. You can run against the guy who's very popular and everybody in the union likes. You're probably going to lose, but you can do it. If I don't win, it's rigged. Well, that's not how it works. You got to win a straight up and down vote. No. Even if they get the most votes, I want all the superdelegates of the union to appoint me anyway. Well, they're not going to do that because the other person got the most votes. But in 4 years, it better be me or it's rigged again. And by the way, let me change all these rules. Well, okay, but are you going to belong to the union? Are you going to become a member? No, I'm not going to become a member. I don't believe in that shit. The union is fundamentally corrupt unless I'm in charge of it. I only want to be part of the union when I'm the president of it. Well, that's unusual. We've never had it done that way before. It's never happened. Fuck that shit. And you don't do it the way that I want and make all these exceptions for me and give me preferential treatment. It's rigged. And I don't believe in that. Okay, well, we'll do that again. 4 years later. Oh, it's rigged. But wait a minute. You're losing the popular vote by 2-1. The new guy in 2020, he's beating you even more than the last labor union president 4 years ago beat you. In fact, they're winning across the board. Rigged again. I just can't catch a break. But the media has put that narrative forward. And meanwhile, the people that love Joe Biden, old people, rural people, black people, single women, suburban voters, basically everybody except 18 to 29 year olds. But basically Biden is building the coalition. When you can get old white rural people and black people in cities, when they both like you and you can build that kind of coalition, that's a winning coalition. That's a president. That's somebody who could be president with a wide popular mandate to control things. He's building that coalition, and the media's just sitting there dumbfounded like, but Bernie Sanders, he had young white males who went to Columbia and are doing pretty well off, and all we ever see are Bernie bros on Twitter, and how is this happening? We don't get this. People are furious. They see Bernie was allowed to rig the system in his favor between 2016 and 2020. He's never been a Democrat. He's not a member. In a Democratic primary, you know, a lot of voters, they kind of want you to be a Democrat. That's kind of like a prerequisite. That's kind of like saying, hey, I want to be on the Jamaican bobsledding team. Okay, are you Jamaican? No. Okay, are you a bobsledder? No, I'm not. Well, you really can't be on the team. Rigged. This is bullshit. I don't like this. You know, they kind of want you to be a member of a club you're trying to be the president of. The Democratic nominee for president, they're not just a presidential candidate. They're the de facto head of the Democratic Party, and it's very hard to have a president like that when for 30 years they've said the DNC sucks, Republicans and Democrats. There's no difference. It's very tough to lead a group that you've shat on for 30 years. It's kind of like somebody saying the Boy Scouts of America are a bunch of racist, homophobic, but pedophiles, by the way, let me be the head of the Boy Scouts of America.
Why would you even want to lead them except for the power? Unless it's just you like the power of the position, why do you even want to be in charge of an organization that you don't believe in?
It's not saying that a group has to be perfect for you to be the leader of it, but you kind of need to believe in it. You can't be a lifelong Pepsi drinker and be the CEO of Coca-Cola. It doesn't quite work that way. So I think voters were furious. They were mad as hell that Joe Biden was being pushed out the door by a news media that was ready to lose this race to Trump, and they rebelled. There was a fantastic rebellion of people like me and like black people, like older voters, like rural Americans that were saying, we don't want to lose to this giant asshole. People say, well, you're trying to build a political platform too. You're no better than MSNBC. Wrong again, friends. I lose money doing Alabama Liberal. I don't make money off Alabama Liberal. This podcast, I release this for free on iTunes, and I release this for free on the website. I don't make money if Trump is in the White House and it's driving clicks and driving views. If it goes from 100 clicks for a Biden article to 200 clicks for a Trump article, I don't see a fucking penny difference out of that. That makes no difference to me whatsoever. I'm doing this because I believe in the country. I believe that in America needs a president that people actually like. I don't like that Twitter and Facebook and the news blogs and the news media are kind of conspiring to keep you glued to your phones. What fresh horrors has Donald Trump unleashed on the world today? This is how bad his latest tweet is. This is why you need to be afraid for your life. I hate that they do that. And they did it for Obama. And that wasn't Obama's fault. But half the country hated him and half the country liked him. They did it for Bush. Half the country, like me, hated Bush. Half the country loved him. We haven't had a president who the majority of Americans actually liked, broadly liked and enjoyed for decades. And the news media likes it that way. They like it when they can stir up your outrage and your disgust, like, oh, Bush is such a moron. And then you get online and you talk shit about him, or you watch what you wouldn't normally watch, or you get in the comment section and trash him in some article. The comment section is now as important as the article itself. Every time you go on Yahoo, the article itself's like five paragraphs. You go down there, 10,000 comments, and they're all Republican trolls being like, oh, bummer, he's the one putting Biden in the White House. Biden's got cognitive mental decline. And then, of course, you see Trump out there talking about Covfefe or mixing shit up. At the Democratic debate, all you heard was Joe Biden has mental decline. Bernie Sanders confused the Ebola virus with coronavirus. He said that Bush bailed out the auto industry instead of Obama. Old people get confused. And I think Trump and Bernie, I feel like they get confused more than Biden does. And so Biden, who's fighting back a stutter, who's in his 70s, I don't think he has the cognitive mental decline people have said over and over again. The media is just desperate that we not have a president who knows what they're doing, who knows the job on day one, who's ready to lead, who's experienced. They don't want us to have a sense of normalcy. Joe Biden, the majority of the country, he's not Hillary Clinton and he's not Barack Obama. He's not going to scare 50%, 40%, whatever it is. He's not going to scare them all day long, every day, make them go buy guns. You know, under Obama, gun sales quadrupled or whatever it was. And people on Fox being like, you just need to be ready for the Muslim revolution that's coming. You know, Obama, he's part of the caliphate. And again, that had nothing to do with Obama. That wasn't his fault. And it's really unfair to really be saying this. I'm just reporting the facts. Bush scared the hell out of a lot of people like me who wanted somebody smart and intelligent and capable and competent and not full-blown fucking corrupt in the White House who could hear America has been attacked and not sit there for 9 minutes reading my pet goat looking like nobody's at home, the lights are out, come back later. Bush sat there under 9/11 just doing nothing. And then Hurricane Katrina, his response was all wrong. It's the exact same with Trump and the coronavirus and making all the wrong moves. Republicans are categorically bad at being president. They suck at it. With Obama and Hillary, that had nothing to do with them. They were capable, competent managers who a lot of the country was just afraid of because Hillary had been demonized as the she-bitch who's going to steal your penis and your guns for decades. I mean, since I was in kindergarten, all you heard was Hillary Clinton's a monster. Well, she wants to give children Medicare. Actually, she wants to make my health care free. Exactly. Only a monster would want your health care to be free. So y'all need to be on the lookout. With Obama, it was the same thing. Demonized to a different way and a different extent. He was always a centrist Democrat. He was never far left like they always said he was. Now that Obama's out of office, it's been like, well, he was a sellout. He was a corporate Democrat. I'm like, wait a minute. When he was in office for 8 years, all we heard was that he was a Marxist. Now he's a sellout. Joe Biden will be the first president, possibly since Ronald Reagan, that a majority of the country is generally okay with. And I know Reagan was a horrible president. On Alabama Liberal, I wrote that Reagan's the fourth biggest asshole in American history, but he had that soothing grandfatherly thing. It would be like you're taking Reagan's personality and that soothing grandfatherly thing, and you're putting behind actual good ideas and competency and somebody who doesn't believe, basically destroying the social safety net. And it's great news for Democrats because we can kind of take back the Senate. A lot of the Senate races that were going to be really close, that were going to be, if Warren was the nominee or Sanders was the nominee, we were probably going to lose. Now they're jump balls at worst and maybe tilt more towards the Democrats. We could pick up Senate seats in Arizona, Colorado, North Carolina, Maine, and possibly my man Doug Jones could hang on to his Senate seat in Alabama. Mitch McConnell's Senate seat is in play, okay? That's huge. I mean, especially since McConnell's dicking around over this coronavirus funding and he doesn't really seem to believe in it or whatever, and it's an election year. If we could get rid of Mitch McConnell, that's almost as sweet as Donald Trump. But then the government is functional, then it's normal, then everything's back to work, and perhaps the news media doesn't really want to see that. All right, everybody, I think I've laid out my case for why the media definitely does not want Joe Biden to be the nominee and certainly does not want him to be president, but maybe we could all use a vacation. Maybe we could all use 4 years of what I call a slow cooker presidency. Set it and forget it. Drop the vegetables in the slow cooker, turn them on, go to work, come back, the house hadn't burned down, everything's fine. Maybe we could go weeks at a time without watching the news. How bad would that be for the news media? Pretty bad, but how good would it be for the rest of the country? Pretty damn great, if you ask me. All right, thanks for listening, everybody, and I'll be back with episode 60 very shortly. Hope you're doing well. Stay safe. Enjoy the quarantine. All right, goodbye, everybody. Thanks for listening.